Ein kurzer Hinweis vorweg. Diese Folge ist in Englisch. Im Krisenmodus wird nun häufiger zweisprachig erscheinen.
War is changing. And the war in Ukraine shows this like no other conflict before. What used to be decided by tanks, infantry and artillery is now often happening in the air, specifically through drones. Warfare is now in the hands of technicians, tinkerers, and AI developers. One officer at the front told me, half jokingly, it's like Terminator. A bit exaggerated, sure, but still, it's a chilling statement, and it feels more like a documentary than science fiction. In this episode, I'm taking you into the world of Drone Warfare 4.0.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Welcome to a new episode of In Crisis Mode. My name is Jan Jessen. I'm the political editor-in-chief at NRZ and report on war and crises for the Funke Media Group. You'll find my reporting in the NRZ, WAZ, The Courier, Braunschweiger Zeitung, Berliner Morgenpost, and of course online and in the e-papers of the Funke Media Group. Today's topic is drones. We've covered this before in one of our podcast episodes. You'll find that linked in the show notes. But the pace of development has been incredibly fast. As I said, no other war has been shaped by drones as much as this one. Over the past 3 years, the battlefield has changed dramatically, and we feel that too. As journalists, we can no longer get as close to the front lines as we used to, simply because the air is now filled with drones. Whether FPV drones, first-person view, where the pilot sees through the drone's camera, or bombing drones or reconnaissance drones, the sky is full. And there's something entirely new we'll talk about shortly. There are now so-called fiber optic drones in use. These are an evolution of drones that are already omnipresent on the battlefield, and this development is far from over. During my last visit to Ukraine, I was near the front, where exactly I can't say, but we visited a drone regiment. They're called Achilles, and they show just how important drones have become. They started when Russia invaded Ukraine, with just 35 volunteers working with Mavics, Chinese drones originally used for reconnaissance. They were actually the first to arm them with explosives. The drones would fly over a target and drop a charge. That was 3.5 years ago. Now this 35-person group has grown into a regiment with 3,000 soldiers, around 1,000 of whom are drone pilots. That gives you a sense of how far drone warfare has come. Today, drones even form their own branch within Ukraine's military, alongside the Navy, Army, and Air Force. Achilles is part of the Army, but there are many such units by now. When I was with Achilles, I visited a drone workshop, hidden in the basement of a building to avoid detection. It wasn't exactly a high-tech lab, more like a space that had been set up just a few months earlier. Still, it was buzzing. Dozens of people working, mainly modifying drones. There we met a young soldier using the call sign Mavic, named after those early Chinese drones. He explained what they do.
Drones supplied by manufacturers don't always meet the technical requirements needed on the front line, meaning they must be modified. We change operating frequencies and add circuit boards and components that trigger an explosion when the drone hits its target. The standard modules the drone is originally equipped with often don't perform well, so we only use what suits our needs. The challenge is that there are many units and, accordingly, a very long front line. In the sector where we operate, certain frequencies and drone configurations work. In another sector, everything can be completely different. That's why manufacturers can't produce exactly what each individual military unit needs for its specific tasks.
зможуть для, конкретно для кожної військової частини робити те, що конкретно потрібно цій військовій частині під задачу.
Basically, even though the drones are manufactured in Ukrainian factories, they still need to be modified for frontline use. They receive the drones and start tweaking. We walked into a room filled with dozens, maybe hundreds of drone boxes. Shelves held batteries, hundreds of them being charged. The room was filled with buzzing sounds, screens everywhere, technicians at work. Their job? Tinkering, testing, modifying. Shifts are 12 hours long, 7 days a week. When I said, that's quite a workload, Mavic just shrugged. We'll sleep after the war. Before any drone goes to the front, where they need to scout and strike effectively, it has to work perfectly. That's why they have these drone workshops, to make frontline-ready modifications. As Mavic explained, they adjust frequencies, ensure stable flight, and confirm everything works. In the workshop I visited, one of several within the regiment, they were modifying FPV drones. These are kamikaze drones, fitted with explosives and flown into enemy positions. They're single use and destroyed on impact. Mavic explained why testing is crucial.
Справа в тім, що дуже багато обладнання, яке ми отримуємо його тут. Далі веземо його на полігон в міських умовах, і все працює.
Much of the equipment we receive works during testing, but not in actual deployment. In the city or the lab, everything runs smoothly. But at the front, it's a different story. The radio spectrum is so congested that many systems simply fail. That's why we test every drone first in the lab, in order to... after flashing the software, meaning uploading the control software. Then we conduct a test flight with weight under real conditions. Only if it performs reliably, there do we send it to the front.
Для того, щоб переконатися, що він дійсно працює. І лише після цього він відправляється вже в зону бойових дій.
Traditional drones are controlled via radio signals. The pilot uses a remote control and the drone responds. But this has limitations. For instance, drones can't fly over hills if the pilot loses line of sight. Radio contact breaks, and they can't operate well in forests. That used to be a relative safety zone for journalists like us. We could move through wooded areas without drone attacks. Not so for soldiers, who are there every day. But even for them, forests offered some protection. Drones had difficulty operating there. You still risked artillery or mortar fire, but at least not drones hunting people. Another key point, these drones can be jammed. Electronic warfare has evolved too, and jammers, devices mounted on nearly every vehicle at the front, can disrupt radio-controlled drones, causing them to crash before hitting their target. That's where the fiber optic drones come in. These drones are controlled via fiber optic cables. The Russians were first to use them around late 2024, and now the Ukrainians are producing them at scale. Picture this. Under the drone is a container, like a spool, holding the fiber optic cable. The cable transmits control signals directly, which makes the drones immune to jamming and able to fly over hills or into forests. No line of sight needed. It's a major shift in how war is fought. But these drones also have drawbacks. The more cable they carry, the heavier they get, which affects maneuverability. Mavic told us they now use cables up to 20 kilometers long.
Зараз від дистанції в 10 кілометрів, катушок на 10 кілометрів вже відмовляємося, тому що ворог почав переміщуватися далі, всю свою техніку, тобто те, що можна знищити.
We used to work with 10-kilometer fiber optic reels, but Russian units have pulled their equipment far back. Now only infantry remains at the front. 10 kilometers are no longer enough. We now rely on 20 kilometers. There are also 35-kilometer reels, but the longer they are, the heavier and more vulnerable the drone becomes. More weight means less explosive payload, and in strong winds, they're easily thrown off course. That's why 20 kilometers is ideal. Portable, efficient, and stable.
І друге, коли вона стає сильно об'ємною, вона стає сильно парусною, і такий дрон дуже важко керований, тому що його зносить вітром. Тому 20 кілометрів, ми зупинились на 20 кілометрах, тому що це оптимальний показник.
That fiber cable is as thin as a cat's whisker, so pilots must steer very carefully. No jerky moves or the cable might snap. They're harder to control and slower, about 45 kilometers per hour, compared to 70 to 80 kilometers per hour for traditional FPV drones. A skilled shooter might spot and hit them, especially since the cable spool increases their size and visibility. And because of the added weight, they can't carry large explosive payloads. Ukraine's approach is, as always, highly improvised. They've built up a defense industry, but they're still far behind Russia in terms of mass production. Russia simply has more resources. But Ukraine has many startups and small companies working on drones. Some now produce large numbers of them. So we're talking about 100,000 drones being produced each month. And just to give an idea, take Ukraine, for example. In just one small workshop we visited, part of a single regiment, and there are many regiments, and even that one regiment has multiple workshops, this one workshop alone modifies up to 4,000 drones per month. Of course, the more improvisation involved, the more difficult it becomes to coordinate, which is why these small workshops are essential to adapt and ensure the drones actually function at the front. We also met with Yuri Fedorenko, the founder of this Achilles regiment. By the way, it's called Achilles because that's his call sign. He's the commander of the regiment. We met him in a basement that had been converted into a command center. We talked with him for a long time about the drone war and how it's evolving. Fedorenko is in his mid-30s, so still quite young, one of the younger officers in the Ukrainian army with a completely different understanding of warfare compared to the older generation, some of whom were trained in the Soviet Union. These younger ones operate in a much more decentralized way and don't need a general staff giving constant orders. It's more about tactical task execution. They're given a mission, and then they carry it out independently. That's a big shift in Ukrainian warfare. Fedorenko also explained to me in detail how these fiber optic cable drones work.
When we talk about a 20-kilometer reel, ideal for disrupting enemy logistics or targeting pilots, we're referring to a drone type with 13-inch propellers, meaning large propellers about 33 centimeters in diameter, plus additional munitions. This drone is large, making it relatively easy for a trained shooter to hit. That's why the loss rate from enemy fire is significantly higher with these drones than with smaller models. However, this technology works exactly where it's needed, at the front. It doesn't replace other systems, as it can't reach 40 kilometers and doesn't allow for precise remote control.
Right now, 20 kilometers is the standard they work with. They spool out a 20-kilometer cable. Honestly, that's pretty wild. That's a serious range. Russian forces can now reach many frontline cities with this. That's also a problem. We were often in Kherson, in the south, where the Russians are just across the river. Also in cities like Kostiantynivka, Kramatorsk, and Kharkiv. All of them lie within that 20-kilometer range. That means Russian pilots can now enter these cities, target civilian infrastructure, hunt down buses. They actually do that. And of course, that's a problem. These drones are being used to terrorize civilians. Still, there's a clear division of roles on the front. Directly at the front line, you don't even need that long a range.
This is a system with limited range and controllability, but indispensable for its specific purpose. For example, infantry units often use reels with a range of up to 7 kilometers. That's sufficient for them. They only need access to the frontmost line. Specialized units, on the other hand, are working to reach 20 kilometers and beyond.
We've mostly talked about attack drones, so-called FPV drones. One advantage of fiber optic drones is their vastly improved image quality. If you watch attack videos online, drones going after tanks or other military targets, the footage is often very grainy. The closer they get to the target, the worse the picture gets. And just before the hit, the video usually cuts out. That's not the case with fiber optic drones. They can slowly circle around a vehicle, identify the most vulnerable spot, and then strike with precision. That's a big change. These drones can observe better and strike more accurately. Ukraine has now heavily reoriented its defense industry toward war and is able to produce a large number of drones domestically. That's especially interesting because, as you may have heard, Chancellor Merkel recently said that Germany wants to help Ukraine with weapons production. In practice, this means Germany will invest money in Ukraine so it can further expand its weapons manufacturing. Because weapons, and especially drones, don't build themselves. You need foreign components and you also need money to pay workers and engineers. That's exactly what Germany plans to support. I think it's a sensible step. It sidesteps endless debates over which weapons we should or shouldn't send, what crosses a red line, and so on. Now the focus is supporting production itself. Ukraine's former defense minister told me the same thing last year. They basically just need the fuel to get the machine running. Marvek also described how differentiated their workshop system has become.
We also have workshops specialized in the repair and modernization of heavy bomb drones. These heavy drones do the real combat work. They bomb enemy positions. At the same time, they are also used for logistics, delivering humanitarian aid, ammunition, and other critical supplies to our units at the front.
There are FPV drones, as we've said, but also reconnaissance drones that operate from the air and monitor enemy movement, now equipped with highly precise cameras. According to Marvek, some drones are also used for logistics. The Ukrainians use agricultural drones, big, powerful machines with 6 or 8 rotors. These are now repurposed to carry heavy loads, including large bombs dropped on enemy positions. The Russians fear them deeply and call them Baba Yaga, a mythological witch figure from Russian folklore. These Baba Yagas either drop large explosives or deliver things like food, ammo, or supplies to the front. This is crucial for troops cut off at the front. They used to use helicopters for this, but helicopters are far easier targets than these drones, even large ones, so drones are now preferred. Russia initially had an advantage in drone tech, especially with fiber optic cable systems. They were the first to use them in 2014. But Ukraine is catching up.
The background is this. Our enemy was the first to deploy this technology, and that put them one step ahead of us. We're now catching up. And I believe that in the coming months, we'll reach the same level the opponent is operating at today.
What's interesting is where they get these fiber optic cables from. I asked, does Germany supply them? Marvek said no, they're all from China. That's interesting since China is seen as close to Russia, but apparently has no issue selling cables that are vital for controlling drones. So China seems more business-focused than ideologically aligned here. Commander Yuri Fedorenko sees a chance for Ukraine to achieve parity, at least in some frontline areas.
Unfortunately, we must acknowledge, because of China's geographic proximity to Russia, the enemy has access to many times more drones than the Ukrainian defense forces. However, I am confident that by the end of this summer, through government contracts and support from our partners, we can reach numerical parity on certain sections of the front.
That's the current state of things as we've been discussing. Now, though, both sides are developing drones powered by artificial intelligence. We're talking about drone warfare 4.0, heading into Terminator territory. These drones have something like a brain. You assign them a task, kind of like a prompt in ChatGPT. But instead of write an article, it's fly to grid square XY, analyze the situation, identify enemy targets, and attack. And then the drone makes the decision itself. That crosses moral and ethical lines we haven't seen before in this war. It's no longer a human deciding to kill. It's a machine. Федоренко has been thinking deeply about this.
Для того, щоб цей штучний інтелект зробив, його треба навчити. Точно так само треба навчити штучний інтелект.
For AI to be effective, it must be trained, just like a person must learn before mastering a task. A key challenge is this. When military equipment like a tank or vehicle is spotted, how should AI know if it's operational, damaged, or just a decoy? Teaching AI to make these distinctions is a major focus right now, and it's crucial. Even for humans, this is hard to judge. For AI, it's a real challenge, but we're making progress, and I believe we're ahead of the enemy in this area. One specialized unit has been involved from day one. It upgrades existing drones, develops new ones, and defines what's urgently needed on the battlefield, like FPV bombers.
Ми формуємо запит на ті безпілотні системи, яких на полі бою ще немає, вони конче необхідні. Наприклад, як FPV-бомбери.
It's very technical, of course, but you could tell this young commander isn't entirely comfortable with the direction things are going. I asked him directly, "What do you think of it?" He said, "Well, eventually the drones will control us. AI will control us. There's no way around it. But we have to develop these systems because the enemy is doing it too." At one point, I even said to my photographer, Rito, "Isn't it crazy that as a world, we're not even asking where this is all going? Not just on the battlefield, but in civilian life too. It's insane how we push development forward without creating boundaries or rules about what we actually want to allow. Honestly, what's happening in Ukraine right now scares me a bit, because at some point, this tech might take on a life of its own." What Федоренко mentioned in the end was something from Twitter, a kind of hybrid story between the FPV kamikaze drones we already know and bomber drones that drop explosives. These are still controlled by pilots, with cameras showing the drone's view on a screen, but the pilot doesn't see everything precisely in real time. FPV drones are flown with headsets, so the pilot basically is the drone, if you put it bluntly. This is now also being developed for bomber drones. What can I say? On one hand, it's fascinating what's happening technologically. On the other, it's terrifying. The Ukrainian soldiers we spoke to, people like Федоренко and Marvek, they're a bit torn too. They're tech nerds who find it all kind of cool. But at the end of the day, these are deadly weapons, eventually controlled by AI. I honestly got goosebumps. It's chilling. I'm very curious to see when the first fully AI-controlled drones will appear on the battlefield. The impact drones already have was shown just 2 weeks ago when Ukrainians launched a massive attack on Russia's strategic bomber fleet. You probably heard about it. Ukraine smuggled FPV drones into Russia by hiding them in trucks, drove them near airfields, opened the truck roofs at a set time. Drones flew out, hit the airfields, and destroyed Russia's strategic bombers. So, small FPV drones costing just a few hundred euros destroyed million-dollar bombers, inflicting major damage on the Russian Air Force. A huge psychological blow, and a clear sign of how far drone warfare has come. Ukraine has even developed long-range drones that can fly thousands of kilometers. They reach deep into Russian territory, striking factories, oil refineries, and more, causing economic damage and disrupting supply lines. Drones have become a decisive weapon class on the battlefield. Soldiers say it clearly. Drones won't fully replace artillery, tanks, or infantry, but their role is becoming more and more central. Where all this is heading, I don't know. As I've said, it scares me. I hope we reach a point, globally, where we set some limits, say what we do and don't want. Sadly, that moment hasn't come yet. I just hope that for as long as this war continues, Ukraine can keep up and counter Russia's developments, and that Germany and Europe will support them in doing so. That was Crisis Mode. This podcast is produced by Alexander Baumeister, who's also a journalist at the Funke Media Group. You'll find all Crisis Mode episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. We have new episodes every second Wednesday, plus special episodes now and then. One recent special featured Carlo Massala, the conflict researcher from the Bundeswehr University in Munich. He spoke about strategic developments to expect in the coming months. We've linked that episode in the show notes. So hit subscribe in your podcast app. It's totally free. Thanks for listening. Take care and see you soon.
Ein Podcast von Funke.